And here we are back on Cambridge Inside Out. It is still June 3rd. The topic I was just bringing up right now had to do with city boards and commissions and a substitute order for a prior order that was introduced at city council meeting last night by Mayor Simmons. And I just want to speak to it a little bit. Now, many years ago, really, talk about the passage of time, like 30 years ago or 32 years ago. I think I wrote an essay basically suggesting that city boards and commissions, some of them are regulatory in nature and need to be standing committees that exist in perpetuity. But other ones, I was on the Recycling Advisory Committee for 22 years. There have been other boards and commissions. The Peace Commission still exists, even though it was formed as a the committee on nuclear. It was looking into nuclear disarmament and peace education, that it has morphed into something completely different, arguably. But I just argue that maybe non-regulatory boards should be sort of like acts of Congress, where they're enacted for a period of 10 years, 15 years, what you pick a number, right? And then there's a sunset provision that when the time comes, they simply pass out of existence unless they re-up. So you basically say, okay, we're doing good work, we're continuing to do good work. Maybe we'll modify the mission a little bit here. And then they, basically appeal to the city council to have them, sort of like a, re-upping the Clean Air Act or the Civil Rights Act, Voting Rights Act, after a period of time, because they're still totally relevant, but they maybe need to be a little modified, and maybe some committees, boards should just say, well, we've done our job, it's time to go home now, right? And as I've, I think a couple of weeks ago mentioned, we don't have an infinite amount of talent and interest to do this, so. And some people serve on multiple committees. I've served on bunches and bunches of them over time. In fact, I was just thinking today, I served on the technical working committee for the computerization of the Cambridge elections, that we always called the TWCC. And our goal was really to sort of come up with recommendations about how to computerize the elections rather than, moving away from either butterfly ballots. Yeah, we had those. With hanging chads, and just the long ballot that we used to have, Cambridge's proportional representation elections, and to computerize the elections. And we made our recommendations for hardware, software, everything. We did it, and that's what happened. That's what we've been using ever since. But I don't believe the technical working committee for computerizations of the Cambridge elections was ever given like a term, like, okay, well, the issue, the report is issued, you go out of existence. I don't know that that was ever specified. And I will say, speaking personally now, probably the only one who can say this, is that as a member of that committee, I kind of viewed myself as sort of a continuing member in perpetuity, meaning if Cambridge Election Commission ever needed some advising on things, and it involved a little bit of analysis, a little math, whatever, that I was just going to do it. And I continued to do it and do ballot analysis and pretty much, I think of it as in any ways, follow-up work to the computerization that we began. And I guess we first implemented in 1996 and for the PR elections in 1997. So I don't know. So does the TWCC still exist? I don't think so. But in a way, I think I am sort of still doing it in a way. But again, it didn't stop me from serving on other boards and commissions either. So like the Central Square Advisory Committee, though some people apparently don't like that. So the substitute order from the mayor basically says, well, maybe it's time to sort of review all of these. Now, of course, Councillor Sabrina Wheeler, who really is very single-mindedly focused on targeting one commission for whatever purpose he's got in mind here, he objected very much to Mayor Simmons's proposal and then tried to kind of sandbag it by saying, well, don't you realize there's 51 committee boards and commissions, and Do you realize what a burden this is going to be? Why can't we just focus on the one thing that I want, right? But my estimation was that city councilors were largely supportive of the idea and that maybe there should be a review. Now, the matter was tabled because so there's still the original order is still there with their various whereases and resolves and all. And then there's the substitute order from the mayor. It was sort of referred in the same way. I think Councilor Nolan also wanted to do some minor change to the original one. So it'll be under, I think the mayor, Mr. Sabrina Wheeler, and maybe Mark McGovern is chair of the Government Operations Committee are going to sort of collaborate to try and come up with sort of a hybrid of all of these things here. But I think they, at least in principle, understood that maybe they don't like the fact that it might be time consuming, but that it was a good idea to at least to do this review. And I was glad to hear that there was at least some tacit support for that. One thing I would say to them, for anyone who may be listening, is that even if they were 51 of them, you don't have to look at all 51 of them right away. You can do it in groups of five, and spread it out this bit. Ultimately, I think maybe they ought to be put on a schedule. So every 5 or 10 years, you're looking at the overlay district various advisory committees, like Harvard Square Advisory Committee, Central Square Advisory Committee, and any other ones that happen to come into existence. Things have to do with si functions within city departments. Like there's a recycling advisory committee, is basically advising a function of the recycling division within the public works department. Do we need that anymore? Maybe we do. Actually, I was told, actually, when I commented on this a couple of weeks ago, that the Recycling Advisory Committee, which is now actually debating whether to change their name to more like the Zero Waste Committee. So in other words, the larger view of sanitation, waste disposal, recycling, reuse, all of that, it's not all recycling. So why are we calling it the Recycling Advisory Committee when in fact the issue is actually a little bit bigger than that? And I thought, well, that's pretty healthy. So, but it's again, that's a situation where spontaneously the commit this particular board sort of felt that they needed to revise their mission a little bit. Not a bad idea, really, it isn't. Maybe the old Civic Unity Commission, I think that once existed, really within a city, or the Civic Unity Committee, which is sort of an unofficial one. Maybe that ought to be revised, and least certainly some of the upheaval and social distress that we went through, with a police-involved shooting a couple of years ago, as well as some of these encampments at the universities, that maybe there could have been a good place to sort of bring people together on that, and not just sort of dumping it on the Peace Commission, which I didn't quite understand how that match was made, other than the fact that we didn't really have any perfect match. So you just pick one. Certainly weren't going to refer it to the Recycling Advisory Committee, for goodness sake, right? But there are a lot of other things that I think could use citizen input that are not even part of any existing boards and commissions. We have a we call it the Kids Council or the Committee for Youth. I forget actually what it's called now, but if you're a kid growing up in this city, especially an adolescent, I mean, are there is there a place where talk about recreational opportunities for people within certain age ranges can be? Do we have a recreation advisory committee, for example? I don't think we have anything like that. So and maybe those would be good things. So maybe it's time for a little creativity from some of our city councilors. Actually, when you think about housing related matters, where does that get discussed? Well, it doesn't. It gets happening. You have an advocacy group like a Better Cambridge says, we want this, do that, do that. And then they kind of feed it into some of their pet city councilors like Azim and Siddiqui. And then meanwhile, you have some other people on the other side of the window. They're getting their advice from political organizations. And, but there's no place where, people can come together and talk about an important thing like planning and housing and what have you. The planning board, once upon a time, arguably spent more time actually doing that. I would argue nowadays they tend to be more out of necessity, perhaps reactive in nature. People come in with a zoning petition, they have to respond to it. There's a special permit application, they have to respond to it. Many, many moons ago, the planning board would actually work on planning documents. I think the growth policy document was something done in collaboration with the planning board once upon a time. I hope I've got that right. But I've got shelves full of planning documents that were all done in conjunction with the planning department and the planning board years and years ago, when they weren't just focusing on adjudicating special permits and doing things like that. So anyway, maybe it's not a bad idea for everybody, not just city councilors, just to sit down and say, okay, what's my ideal structure of various advisory groups comprised of some, maybe some city staff, but certainly primarily the citizenry, to just come together and come up with some good ideas and solutions, rather than being thoroughly dependent on these well-funded political organizations to sort of cram things through because they can, which I think is probably the worst way to get any kind of reasonable outcomes. Anyway, have I said my piece on all of that? I don't know if I have, but something. Another matter worth commenting on, though I don't know that there's a whole lot to say about it, was that the big item at last night's Cambridge City Council meeting was the final votes on the fiscal year 2026 budget, as well as this whole raft of loan authorizations. Very significant, actually. Now, usually what happens typically is when the budget book comes out, I've got my copy sitting here somewhere. The city council holds hearings. Some people gripe about, Zondervan was still around, he'd be griping about the police, I'm sure. Actually, I think I was it no was it Nolan? Forget now. Sabrina, I didn't watch all the hearings, but Sabrina Wheeler, Siddiqui, whatever, they all raised issues about the police budget because they just always do, whether it's well informed or not. It doesn't matter because, again, they're, kind of speaking to their political masters, and so this is what you got to say. But all the budgets were forwarded to the full city council with a positive recommendation, but there were certain requests that grew out of some arguments. I think there was this thing about the Transition Wellness Center that was not funded, thankfully. But there was a proposal to have some additional monies made available for municipal vouchers for, to prevent homelessness or to, currently unhoused people who are unhoused. And so the manager did come back, as he promised, with setting up a federal grant stabilization fund, because that's really going to be an even bigger issue as the year unfolds. Like, you can pass all the budgets you want, but then if halfway through the year federal money is just like getting yanked, then do you just make up the difference? It's kind of hard to do. Or what do? You have to be really creative and efficient to do it, but you do something. So they created a new municipal voucher with supportive services for people who are unhoused, a $5 million free cash appropriation to set up a grant stabilization fund, because of the vagaries of what's happening from Washington. And anyway, so there was an adjusted budget, and that was voted last night. As was the water fund budget and the public investment budget. There's three, but they're all sort of part of the FY 2026 budget. I found it interesting. There were two city councilors who decided to make speeches about how they were not going to support the current operating budget. Those counselors were Sumbul Siddiqui and Jeevan Sabrina Wheeler. Now, again, pardon me for inferring things that maybe I have no business inferring, but Ms. Siddiqui has wanted to have her pet little Rise Up Rise Up Cambridge program funded, which was like a $22 million out of the ARPA funds. And when those dried up, she somehow wants there to be a successor to that made part of this budget, even though we are facing greater fiscal constraints than we have in decades. So that wasn't going to happen. So I think she's not happy that she didn't get it. So she sort of, I would argue, is maybe is a bit of a protest vote, said, I'm not going to vote for the operating budget. Sabrina Wheeler, similar, but you know, I'm not even going to try and read in his mind because I think he's of the sort of the DSA crowd that basically feels that there's no such thing as too much taxation, you know, on those aristocrats and off with their heads and all of that. And you know, we ought to be funding social housing and handing out vouchers and bringing out rent control and everything here. So he also decided he was not going to vote. Now, of course, it's of no consequence. So that passes on a 7-2 vote. It only needed 5 votes to pass. So, you know, so it's great. You can make your statement, you know, knock yourself out, right? So anyway, it passed. All the loan authorizations passed, and now we move on. So all these items that have been collecting in unfinished business for a while are now voted, done, move on, right? Which is sort of a good thing, clearing the deck as you wait, as you head toward the, I mean, June, we have city council meetings until the end of June. Then there's the summer break. We don't come back till either the very end of July or early August for the midsummer meeting. And of course, city councils or incumbents and challengers will all want to be knocking doors and printing up hand cards and making buttons and putting up yard signs and doing phone banking and doing all the other stuff. Of course, the incumbents have the advantage that they have city-funded aides that are going to help, at least some of them who do that, which I find deplorable, borderline illegal. Actually, not even borderline illegal. I don't think there should be taxpayer-funded campaign workers. And some of the city council aides are precisely that. And it's not a good situation. And how it came to be that way, can't say. Yeah, I always like to believe that under Plan E, we sort of, it was an anti-patronage kind of system, but we've been slowly eroding some of those structures with every passing year. So anyway, the budget's passed. It was pretty gigantic, a general fund budget of $928,578,370, water fund budget of $13,602,950, public investment budget of $41,204,770 for a total adopted budget of just shy of $1 billion, $992,181,320. Now, on top of that, those, as I mentioned, there's the loan authorizations, which is not an appropriation. Basically, it authorizes the city leaders to, you know, go to the bond markets and borrow money to fund big long-term projects. Not always long-term projects, but you basically amortize a big bill over many years. And we have our triple bond, A bond rating, which means we get very favorable rates. So it's been a largely a good strategy for dealing with things like building new schools and what have you. So in addition to the 992 million in change, operating budget or total budget, there's $109,936,000 in loan authorizations, not all of which will be raised or spent, but the city management is now authorized to do so, and generally they do it for the most part. I mean, they wouldn't ask for the loan authorization unless they felt they needed it. So for the most part, they will do it. One other item that's it's been kind of lingering for a while, I mean, I might argue it's been lingering for 10 years, but is this issue, but it has really accelerated since COVID years, is the issue of vacant storefronts. Now, there are some rather silly counselors who somehow thought you can just find those bastards out of existence, you know. There was even once a proposal to fine them for every month of vacancy to the tune where over a course of 2 years they would have been fined the entire assessed value of the property. Thoroughly illegal. So anyway, but you know, the ideas about doing something about vacancies is sort of been around. Now I'm more of the carrot mindset rather than the stick. I think it, a lot of these property owners, you can just work with them and get better outcomes that way. And hopefully that's what will happen. But we have coming up, I think on I may have the date here wrong, but I believe it's yeah, June 23rd. At 1 in the afternoon, there's the Economic Development and University Relations Committee will have a public meeting where they're inviting representatives from 23 long-term vacant properties to come to the meeting. How many of them will actually show, or whether the, you know, the big kahuna, which is Gerald Chan's show, that remains to be seen. But I think it's the right thing to do, at least to try and get some of them in there, because, you know, in my opinion, you're going to get more value out of having face-to-face meetings and requests and sharing of ideas with some of these property owners than you will by trying to just beat them up. I mean, honestly, I feel the same way about housing development. You know, see, we have city councilors who will pass, you know, various what did they call the multifamily housing thing, which has been spun as ending exclusionary zoning, but what it really was is just a big upzoning bill. Where they basically do a broad brush way of like, we'll just authorize everybody to build very large buildings with minimal setbacks anywhere and everywhere without any notion about where it works best. And I've my attitude has long been that, you know, if we hop in the car, I can we can drive around town and we can just point and mark on a map various parcels which could really use some development, housing development in particular. And if you just, you know, made a list of all these properties and then just called the property owner up and said, okay, this property has been sitting here kind of defunct for a while. How can we help each other out here? You know, there are some loan guarantees that we can do as a city to actually make things happen. You know, and hopefully not trying to be so burdensome. I mean, I think the city has a bit of a history of putting so many strings attached to a property owner that they say to hell with it. I don't want any part of working with the city if you're going to basically require me to do this, this, that, and the other thing, you know. But if you really believe in there should be more housing development, why not just sit down with some of the property owners and say, hey, what do you want to do? What do we want to see? Where can we come together and find some happy median, you know? And if that's not all, you know, the city who says, oh, it's got to be 100% subsidized housing from now to the end of time, that's basically a non-starter for most property owners. So you should basically be just focusing more on just turning dysfunctional properties into functional properties. That ought to be your number one priority, not whether the city can own them or control them. You know, that's just a that's a wrong-headed control freak mindset. It doesn't help anybody. Anyway, so that's coming up. If you have some interest in that, and you know, if I knew Gerald Chan personally, I'd give him a call and say, hey, come on, Gerald, show up. You're a good man. You've got a lot of resources. You've if you redevelop some of your properties in good ways, you'll be treated as a hero. So come on, let's do it. Right. So anyway, so those are a few things. One thing I'll just mention briefly, only because I'm relatively ignorant about it. I would need to call up Heather Hoffman to get tutored on this. So when this city council passed a this multifamily housing rezoning big thing here, they either inadvertently or in full knowledge, I think, actually broke something, which is called the Dover Amendment, which basically gave the city some control over institutional development that they've had and now apparently is not, they don't have. And it's sort of coming to head because there was a, I think it was, it, what it is, it's a Hillel or something at Harvard University is now was going to, wanted to do some building on their site. But now they're basically say, hey, under this new zoning, we have, you can't limit us. So they built something, they proposed something much, much, much more significant. So I think some of the city councilors were aware of this now. They had been reminded of this by city staff, but they wouldn't forge through anyway. I like this. My snarky comment was, is it's yet another example of the city council's current break it and then maybe we'll try and fix it later kind of approach to things. So anyway, we'll see. But I want to try and find out a little bit more about that. I think maybe the last thing I'm going to say here, just briefly, because I don't want to obsess about it too much. So I live on Broadway. I'm definitely among the group here who does not want to see these separated bike lanes installed on Broadway with the removal of 60% or more of the parking on Broadway. It's not all about parking, by the way. It has to do with curb access and a lot of other things. But you know, some of the dirty pool that I've been witnessing here. So the particular group that I was associated with here, you know, so there was a flyer made here, which basically invited people to a gathering down at the El at Elks Lodge here. So what did the Cambridge Bike Safety people do? They basically took the entire thing here, r ripped the posters down, and replaced it with one that says exactly the opposite message and trying and then telling everybody who is who wants to put in the separated lanes to come to that meeting. It just sort of flood the meeting. This is like an act of war, honestly. But that's what they're doing, you know. Actually across the street from my house where there is one of those blue bike stations, they you know, they just started, you know, posting posters saying there are people trying to kill us here and they're putting them right on the school building, whatever. I've had signs, I had a couple of notices on the front of my house. They tore them off, you know. This is like a mean, mean political business going on right now. And I don't know how this is all going to be resolved, but I do find it kind of curious that the Cambridge Bike Safety Group actually put out a fundraising appeal. They seem to have money falling from the sky. They said we ought to match it, $20,000 matching grant. Yeah. Last thing I'm going to say is I did a little quick analysis and of the signatures from our petition and those who are writing in to restore the lanes here. Our group is, we're 25 years older on average, you know, so this is like old people. Anyway, see you later, Cambridge Inside Out.